Chapter 7. Hope Returns.
Good afternoon. I am calling to speak to your patient, Miss Queenie Hennessy. She sent me a letter just over 4 weeks ago.
On the 26th day and 6 miles from Stroud, Harold decided to stop. He had made a mistake at Bath and gone the wrong way, losing a whole day. He had corrected that now and was 4 days past Bath, but the mistake troubled him badly. Why had he spent so much time looking at the sky and the hills and talking to people? Why hadn't he gone in the car? Of course, he could not do it in boating shoes. Of course, Queenie could not keep living just because he had told her to. He also missed Maureen more and more. He knew that he had lost her love, but it was wrong to walk away. He missed David too. And then there was the cost. The hotels were cheap, but he could not keep spending their retirement money like this. If Queenie was still alive, he would take the train. He could be in Berwick in the evening. The woman at the hospice said,
"I'm very sorry, but you can't."
It was like hitting a wall that he had not seen.
Is she?
But he could not say it.
"Are you the man who's walking here from Devon?"
Harold's heart jumped.
"Yes," he said. "Mr. Fry, Queenie has no family, no friends. When people have no one to care for, they usually die quickly."
"I see." His blood had gone still and cold.
"After you rang, we all noticed the change in Queenie. It was wonderful. Sometimes she sits up. She shows us your postcards."
"She's waiting, Mr. Fry, like you said that she should." A happy cry came out of him.
"She's alive! She's getting better! Good Lord!"
He laughed.
"She's waiting for me!"
"When you rang and told us about your walk, I was worried that you didn't understand how ill she was," the woman said.
"But I was wrong."
"It's an amazing thing. I don't know how you thought of it, but maybe it's what the world needs, a little more faith.
Where are you now?"
He even laughed at that.
"I'm getting near to Stroud," he said. "Please tell her that I will keep walking and she must keep living."
"I believe that she will. Thank you, Mr. Fry." For the rest of the afternoon, Harold walked. A wonderful thing had happened, and he would not stop again. On the road into Stroud, he passed a builder's skip full of rubbish and noticed something dark on top. He moved towards it and pushed some bits of wood off it. It was an old sleeping bag. Harold shook away the rest of the wood and dust. It had a small hole in it, but he could still open and close it. He put it under his arm and continued walking. That night, he slept in a farm shed at the end of a track and woke at first light. He kept walking, drinking river water, and buying coffee and food from petrol stations. He reached Birdlip Hill and spent his second night outside in a field. He went on towards Cheltenham, with the valley of Gloucester to his left like a great bowl, the black mountains on the horizon. He stared down at the houses and the factory roofs. There was so much out there, so much life. He felt that he was both inside and outside of what he saw. Harold began to understand that this was the truth about his walk. He was a part of things, and he was also separate from them. It was a beautiful May. He walked on and on, staying on roads and tracks, always following the compass north. He went into Warwickshire
where the land flattened. South of Coventry, he met a nice young man with soft blue eyes and a beard, who said that his name was Mick. He bought Harold an orange juice and listened to his story.
"And you really believe that you'll get to Berwick?" Mick said. "It's like a modern-day pilgrimage. This is a great story, the kind that people love."
As they went outside, he took Harold's photograph on his phone.
"Just to remember you," he said. "Try to look like you're really tired."
Harold stood on the road and Mick took the photograph. Then Harold carried on walking on into Derbyshire. When he got to Ticknell, he was surprised when two men stopped and stared at him. He noticed the taxi driver wave as he passed him. A girl with a guitar stopped playing and smiled. People everywhere seemed to know who he was.
"You're in the newspapers, Harold," Maureen told him later when he phoned. "You and Queenie Hennessy."
Of course, Harold had not realized that Mick was a journalist. After he had written the story for the Coventry Telegraph, interest in Harold's pilgrimage began to grow. National newspapers bought the story, and then the radio began reporting it. People talked about it in shops, pubs, parks, and offices. They talked about walking and what it meant to be a pilgrim. Newspaper and TV reporters stood outside Maureen's house. What shocked Maureen most when she looked at Harold's photograph was how much he had changed. It was just over 6 weeks since he had gone out to post his letter. He still wore his jacket and tie, but his hair was long and untidy, and he had a beard. His skin was so dark that he looked like a different man. Harold was just north of Barnsley when he heard someone shout his name. A thin young man wearing a baseball cap ran through the traffic towards him. The man lifted a sports bag and said that his name was Wilf and that he had come to join Harold.
"I'm going to be a pilgrim, Mr. Fry," he said. "I'm going to save Queenie Hennessy too. I've got my sleeping bag and everything that I need."
It was like talking to David. Even the young man's hands were shaking. There was no time to say no because Wilf was already walking next to him. Wilf kept talking nervously. Harold tried to listen, but he kept thinking of David. Wilf believed that God had sent him to be with Harold.
"Ask the way," Wilf said, "and God will show you."
They continued along the road. The younger man's steps were smaller than Harold's, so he ran half of the time.
"I didn't know that you had a dog," Wilf said.
"I don't." He looked over Harold's shoulder.
"Then whose is it?"
Wilf was right. On the other side of the road, a dog was following them. It was small and the colour of autumn leaves. As the two men started walking again, it started walking with them. Every time they stopped, it stopped.
"Go away!" shouted Harold. "Go home!"
The dog came up to Harold and dropped a stone at his shoe. Harold threw it and the dog brought it back.
"Maybe it doesn't have a home," said Wilf. "I think that it likes you. It wants to come too."
"I can't look after a dog. I don't have food, and I'm walking on busy roads."
"Go home, dog."
But the dog kept following. It was not safe to stay on the A61, so Harold moved to the quieter B6132, although it meant that they were travelling more slowly now. A woman cutting her roses recognised Harold and tried to give him money. Harold asked her to make them a sandwich instead and give them some matches for later. She let them use the bathroom and the telephone. When Maureen answered, she sounded cross. Everyone's gone mad because of you, she said. People want to come into the house. Rex found someone trying to take a piece of the garden wall.
Harold came back from the shower to find that the woman was having a small party for them with her friends. He listened to the men talk about their own adventures with walking and shooting and boats.
People think that I'm your son, said Wilf.
Harold smiled, suddenly feeling kind towards the boy. They walked to the gate where the dog was waiting for them.